welcome to the 15th episode of the 5th season of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday the 25th of September, and in this episode we're going to talk about the Amazon shopping lens brouhaha, and we'll have a look at some of the entries for the competition results and announce who's won the competition. Ooh. We will of course cover the latest news, events, bits about Ubuntu, tomorrow's technology today, and we'll go over your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Laura, and joining me tonight are Mark.
Hello.
Alan.
Hello.
And Tony.
Good evening.
Mark,
always one.
What have you been up to?
What have I been up to?
That's what she said.
I fixed the countdown on the website, so now it's easier to read.
And accessible.
Ooh, when did you do that?
I did that about 3 o'clock this afternoon when I remembered I said I'd get it done for this episode.
Excellent. Mission accomplished. Achievement unlocked. Well done.
Yes.
What about you, Alan?
I fixed my first thing with Suguru.
Oh,
you mentioned it to me last time I was on the, here in the studio, and I bought some Suguru, and I fixed our what's that called? Clothes horse washing, the thing you put washing on to dry.
Yeah, clothes horse.
Yes.
Yeah, the metal thing's busted, so I've fixed those.
Oh, cool.
So
what, is Suguru for the benefit of the listeners who weren't in on your conversation last week?
It's really.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about it on there. Right.
just Google Suguru. Sugru. It's like a
like Femur. Play-doh-y stuff. Is. No. Yeah. A lot of people know what Femo is.
Though. Oh, okay. I don't. It's like rubbery stuff, and then you mold it into a shape and it'll fix something.
It air dries, doesn't it?
Yeah. It takes 24 hours to dry. But you get them in little vacuum sealed, like 5 gram amounts.
Uh-huh.
And you cut it open and they come in different colors, and then you mold it to whatever, you know, they've got loads of uses on the website.
You blend the colors together.
But also, the other thing is I've been playing a game called Nikki and the Robots, which is brilliant. It's a open source game.
Oh, it's open source, is it?
LGPL, hosted on Launchpad.
Ooh.
And you can buy levels for the game.
Cool.
And it's a pay what you want thing.
Cool.
And there's also community levels as well. So there's a map editor built in, so you can make your own levels and contribute them. It's really, really, and it's a brilliant game as well. It's really, really old retro 8-bit style, a twitch kind of jump and thing, and you fall down and you die and you start from the beginning of the level, and it's just brilliant. I love it. And the music's great and the kids love it.
Excellent.
So yeah, it's worth worth buying the levels for that.
Cool.
Excellent. Oh, I've been updating my talk for SkyCon.
Oh yeah.
SkyCon? What's
SkyCon?
That?
Well, we'll cover that in our event segment in just a few minutes' time. I'm updating my existing talk that I did for originally back in 2009. A few things that have come out of it that have amused me, such as the bit where I said, people appreciate good audio quality, but...
really appreciate good audio
quality. But, well, this bit was, but are surprisingly tolerant of bad audio.
Not anymore. Isn't.
I did wonder, pause to reflect on whether, because now that proper radio stations are involved in podcasting things, where the people's expectations are higher than they were, or our audience has increased and people are a bit more kind of fussy or whatever. So yeah, that was interesting. What about you, Laura?
I went to the circus.
Really?
An actual
clowns
circus with clowns, acrobats.
Mm.
It was very cool.
What, here? Near here?
Yeah, near here.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Animals and
no.
There was
don't
a dog.
Like circuses with animals. Okay. There was a there was a dog. It was brilliant. It was like a sheepdog, really.
Yeah, that refused to roll over and play dead. On
the guy was like, "I'm play dead." And the dog just went.
It was not a hard put upon dog.
No,
sure.
It was a very happy dog.
Yeah,
it was a sheepdog type dog, and it was basically doing sheepdog tricks. But other than that, yeah, acrobats and all sorts.
Awesome,
cool.
So, yeah. So, let's get on with the show.
So back in 1987, a very famous and very clever person said, it's easy when you've got all the information inside help, no investigation, no questions in the house, no give and take. There's a big bang in the city. We're all on the make. We're shopping. We're shopping.
Was that Mr. Neil Tennant?
It was.
Right.
And recently.
Was this before I was born by any chance?
1987?
Yeah.
God, I hate you. We need older presenters.
We've got
to get my jokes.
I've got quite a range.
Oh, thanks. So we recently had beta 2 of Ubuntu 12.10 being prepared. Should be ready for this Thursday. And as part of that, loads of code landed rather late. Late, as in about 3 weeks late. Feature freeze being some time ago, and user interface freeze and documentation freeze all passed. And then loads of code landed a bit late. And one of the things that landed really late was a new lens called the shopping lens. And it's been referred to as the Amazon lens or Amazon shopping. But it's generically called shopping lens or more suggestions. As it's actually rendered on the screen, it just says more suggestions. And this has caused a bit of a brouhaha.
Okay. So, why a brouhaha?
Well, what it does is, or what the current implementation does, is when you press the super key in Unity, you get what's called the dash home. And there's a number of lenses, but the home one is the first one you see if you just press the super key. And the idea is that you start typing and you search for stuff and you search for files and applications and whatever, music and video and whatever. And the idea is that it's all brought to that front screen. And the change is that now there's an additional section or category in there called More Suggestions. And that shows you products that you could buy.
And okay.
This is the contentious thing.
Products you could buy from Amazon.
Products you could buy online from shops like Amazon.
Okay.
Are so there, Amazon is only one of them.
There are others in there?
Yes, there are.
Such as?
The Ubuntu One Music Store is one.
Ooh.
And there are others in other territories.
Okay.
But I only have access to Ubuntu One Music Store and Amazon in the UK.
Right.
In other countries, people have access to other stores.
Hmm. Fair enough. Okay.
And so the contentious stuff relates to the fact that it's surfacing content from the internet in the dash rather than just your local stuff.
Yes.
So it's going off to the internet. And there are some other issues relating to the fact that it's not covered by the privacy policy and the content's going over an unencrypted connection and there's no way to block it if there's like adult content in that store, for example.
Right.
So there's a number of like issues and
okay. So is there a reason for Canonical doing this, making this lens?
Of course. It was done for a bit of a laugh.
Right.
No. The reason it's done is to generate revenue.
So okay. Canonical basically get the referral fee for any sales made to that.
Yeah, it's the same as like, you know, when bloggers put a link to, you know, I bought this from Amazon, and you click the link and it's got their tag in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you then subsequently buy something, only if you buy something, then Amazon give a portion to the person whose tag that is.
Yeah.
So in this case, it's a Canonical tag. So there's like two things. One is it's revenue generating for Canonical. And the second thing is it puts extra stuff in the dash that
could be quite handy.
Could be handy.
Yeah.
Rather than you searching and getting a blank dash, you've at least got something or something related to what you might be looking for.
Mm-hmm. So could other stores offer up their content to be added?
I guess so. If they have an API and we can hook into that. I mean, there's a bunch of them already that are hooked in and other stores could hook in. Yes.
Right. So this is the data that goes from a user searches for Cliff. Okay. They've got a file on their computer that is about the White Cliffs of Dover.
Right.
And then, so they start to search Cliff in the thing, and up comes a context thing for a Cliff Richard album for Amazon.
Well, there's lots of things that could come up. So they might have, like, a folder called, you know, Cliff.
Yeah.
And in that folder might be all the files they received from a guy called Cliff. There might be his CV. There might be other stuff, you know, but all they typed was Cliff. There might be images of Cliff's photos that have come from Shotwell. There might be music, yeah, like you say, from Cliff Richard. Yep. But there might be music on their local machine. There might be videos, you know, all kinds of stuff. But yes, also from this third party, there could be internet content.
And that there's a query that goes off to Amazon, so Amazon will know what you're searching for.
It doesn't go directly, does it? It goes via a web service, a Canonical web service.
Correct.
It doesn't go straight.
It will be, yeah. There's already a bug file. That was filed, like, within a few minutes of the code landing.
So is it a good thing or a bad thing that it goes via Canonical servers?
I think the initial sort of accusation was that it's sending it to a third party like Amazon, who, you know, they profile customers so they can, you know, suggest things that they might want to buy. And allowing them to do that from your desktop, essentially, when you might not be specifically searching for products.
Mm.
Whereas if it goes via Canonical, then it's Canonical that's searching for all these products. So it's not necessarily, a user privacy thing.
Mm. So for example, if I'm sat here on your IP address in your house,
yes,
and I do a search on my machine, then that is going to go from your IP to Canonical's servers in data centers around the world,
yep,
wherever they are, I don't know. And that then gets proxied to Amazon or all of these stores, and the results, yes, come back to you. So Amazon don't know your IP. Some stores do, because, right, some stores require the IP to do GeoIP lookup.
Okay.
But as far as I'm aware, Amazon don't.
So Canonical, do they track who's searching for what? Or could they? I guess they could.
Yeah.
But you know, do they at the moment, do they have an interest in?
I don't think the reporting stuff exists yet. But the guard, right.
I'm not expecting you to answer this from a technical point of view, but yeah, there's two issues. If Canonical is databasing all of the lookups that people are making and perhaps trying to correlate them against information about that user, potentially, the sort of thing that Google does when you're using Google, to be fair, that's one thing. But if it's just a service that isn't logged, or there's no record made of a search, then it's a different matter, because it is just acting as a broker, essentially passing the message from one service to another, just to provide a bit of extra anonymity.
So I think there's explicitly that's not being done, to report on a particular user. There's aggregated data, so we can say, okay, people are, you know, searching a lot for this type of music, or searching for those types of products, or we get a lot of searches for videos, or we get a lot of searches for music, and the kind of aggregated data, but not specifically John Smith on this particular IP did these searches on these days. Not that, right, kind of detail, and not the kind of detail that is personally identifiable either.
Okay, so what are people getting worked up about other than the unencrypted connections?
Well, one of the first sort of posts about this was on Slashdot, where the headline was that Ubuntu was basically being ad-supported by default, which, to be fair, given what we've just discussed, I don't think that's a very fair representation of what it is, because it's not like something is sort of profiling the stuff that you might like and then just popping up with suggestions. It's you're searching for something and you're getting search results,
and you still don't have to buy it,
and you still don't have to buy, well, you don't have to buy anything that you're advertised to, but it's not the same sort of thing as an advert from Google on the side of a website, or Opera having Google ads in at the top of the browser like it used to.
I can see why people have this feeling that it is adverts, because there is someone being paid, and it's not you, it's Canonical, someone being paid for getting that picture of an item, mm-hmm, and a link on your machine. So I can see how that can be, in some people's minds, that can correlate, well, that's an advert then. You're being paid to put content on my machine.
Yeah.
That's an advert.
But then so is having the Ubuntu One Music Store in Banshee by that token.
Well, in fact, this feature of looking up stuff online has already been in Ubuntu. You on 12.04, you can go into the video lens and type, Little Britain or something, and you'll get videos show up. And if you're in some countries, you'll get videos that are pay for, like Amazon Video Rental.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't know you could do that.
And that's already been. Well, we can't do it in this country, but in other countries you can. And if you look in the filter on the side of the video lens, that's been there for a while, it shows you a list of all the sources, and some I've never heard of. Some of these are like, I mean, there's obviously ones like the BBC iPlayer and TED and stuff like that, but there are third parties that we're sending users to already, and so we're getting a cut of that.
Is the difference then that it's on the home
Yes,
of the dash. So. That is that the thing
I think
that people
that's
are getting upset about?
The main contentious thing is that not it's partly because it's on the main home screen,
yeah,
the dash, and partly because it's every search term.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've got lots of videos with words that, you know, are something we wouldn't utter on this show, or, you know, stuff that, yeah, that you might not want people to know. So an, yeah, example that some people have given is, well, what if I'm, you know, in a doctor's practice and I've got all my file names are my patient name and the disease that they have, you know, and I search for John Smith syphilis or something, then, you know, I'm passing John Smith syphilis to Canonical Server. So, you know, there's a question there about, you know, do users really want to have that kind of data surface to a third party?
This kind of, it feels like a kind of boundary thing as well, in that this is my machine and there's a boundary around it. It's my personal machine. And when I do a Google search, I know that I'm sending that data out there. Whereas when I'm doing a, as you said, the search on the home dash thing, it's meant to stay within my machine because that's what I'm searching.
Mm. Well, that's what it is at the moment.
Yeah.
We say it's meant to.
Well, that's what I'm intending to it to. I'm intending to search my local machine.
But your machine, in inverted commas, leaks information.
Oh yeah.
You know, all over the place when you're browsing stuff. Mm. Yeah, when you go to Google, they do all sorts of data mining on you, and so do Amazon. When you go to their website, they do all kinds of data mining on you. Yet this isn't.
But it's not so much that; it's about whether you understand that.
Sure, and one of the bugs I think was filed that requested that there be a kind of disclaimer or an agreement when you first log in or when you first install or when you first sign in that says, hey, you're going to get this content surfaced on the dash. You know, you need to click through to agree to that, or, you know, you might want to switch it off. And in fact, Didier, who works at Canonical, has been working today on a feature to allow you to turn it on and off, and turn remote searches on and off in any of the lenses
without having to uninstall the package.
Yeah.
I mean, the model could just be like when you get apps on your phone and you have to authorize it to connect.
Yeah, and, you know, generally, in inverted commas, normal people just go, yeah, and click OK, and don't really read all of that. And some of the argument is, well, we're not normal people. You know, at the moment, we're the kind of people actually who are advocates for your software, advocates for free software, and those kind of people are very privacy aware and very aware of the kind of data that goes over networks, and, you know, and they're not going to advocate something which does something that goes against their ideas of what, you know, free software should do.
Do we think it would put people off if you are a new Ubuntu user or new to Ubuntu, you are shown this Unity interface and you're shown how you can search for files or applications, and there are adverts for products that you know you don't own, so you know that they're adverts. Is that a negative factor? Do people think it could be perceived as ad-supported and go, oh, well, you know, I don't want to see lots of adverts everywhere?
It's a tricky one. I don't know. Mm. I mean, you know, I've known this has existed for a little while, you know, because I work for Canonical, and I've thought long about it, you know, what would users think? And I'm not sure. I'm really not sure how people react to it. I know that there's a lot of dissent, both inside our community, and we've received a lot of flack from people who are not within our community. And when I say I'm not within our community, I mean people who are running completely different distros, not contributing to Ubuntu at all, you know, outside the community, but within the free software world, who are giving us a lot of flack for this. Mm. And so, but they're not... It sounds harsh. They're not our target audience.
Yeah.
People are already running free software. They're not our target audience. Target audience is people who walk... I've said this before. People who walk into PC world and buy a computer. Mm. Would they be annoyed by this? Hmm. They already get, you know, on Windows, they already get pop-ups saying, you know, upgrade to Norton Antivirus, blah, and subscribe to AOL. And we don't want to go down that road.
No.
But this thing has to be financed somehow.
I have no problem with the financing part of it, personally. It's like, well, it's not like I've paid for the software and this is another way to contribute money for the software. And,
right.
Yeah.
I think I can see why people might be a bit it's my, as I said before, my
it's
local
my
search.
Yeah.
But then only if you think about it, and it's the same with the Google thing, it's only when you think about it that you go, they know a lot about me. But most of the time, you don't think about it.
Yeah.
Mm. Whether that's right or wrong is a different issue. Mm. But the fact is, I'm comfortable with Google knowing about my entire life, it seems. So it's just a matter of getting over it.
Mark Shuttleworth said in his blog post, you know, we already have root on all your machines.
Yeah, that was a bit unfortunate. I think that
poorly worded.
Yeah, I think that was a turn of phrase. I mean, I can see where he's coming from. What he's trying to say is that, okay, if you're trying to say you don't trust Canonical,
you already
then,
do, basically.
Then,
yeah.
You know, there is implicit trust by the fact that the software that you're running on your machine was packaged, sometimes developed, or a lot of it was developed by people who work for
us. If they wanted
to
backdoor it, they could have done it easily.
If we wanted to screw you up, we could have done it long time ago. But that's not really, you know, it's more of an argument that surely we're doing what we can in the interests of our users.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. A super engineer in our IRC channel says that he wonders how many people complaining are aware of what their smartphones are doing in the background.
Indeed.
Yes, which is definitely worth thinking about.
Well, I mean, the thing is, some of these people who are complaining are the kind of, you know, what you might call refuseniks who won't have smartphones or will have a smartphone but won't sign into Google when they enable it.
Right.
Or we'll have ad blockers and JavaScript blockers and, you know, all kinds of other, and we'll surf the internet through Tor. Okay. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's room in the internet for people like that. But the fact is that the vast majority of people don't do that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, if you have got a thought or two about the Ubuntu shopping brouhaha, send us in your feedback, podcast@ubuntu-uk.org.
And now it's time for the news. After recent outages, GitHub has shared details of the cause of the downtime.
What was it?
Upgrading to a bigger MySQL cluster and something fell apart when they turned some of it on. And yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
right.
It's a bit unfortunate.
Pretty dull.
It was sort of down first thing in the morning a week or so ago.
How long was it down for?
I think it was down all morning.
Wow.
As I remember,
this is our top news item.
It matters to a lot of open source projects.
A website was down a while ago. It's all right now, though. News at 11.
Bong.
It's war.
The CTO of Alibaba.com, Wang Huan, I think, has accused Google of straying from its motto of don't be evil. Wang's comments were prompted when Acer's decision to pull out of a joint launch with Alibaba for a phone running Alien OS, a system Google claims is derived from but incompatible with Android. Wang claims Google put pressure on Acer using their agreement as a member of the Open Handset Alliance.
So basically, the agreement apparently says that if you're a member of the Open Handset Alliance, you can't ship incompatible versions of Android, which this Alien OS is purported to be.
Right.
Right.
So that's why all those manufacturers out in China are probably not members of the Open Handset Alliance, so they can ship tablets that have got, like, wacky, hacked-up versions of Android, or...
I guess so.
But even then, they're still compatible, so it's not a problem. But this was very hacked up in some way.
Yeah, well, I think it's sort of supposed to be Android compatible, but they don't actually say it's Android. It's derived from Android.
Right, okay.
Mm.
In more GitHub news.
What?
Oh, bring it on.
A lawsuit has been launched against Rackspace Hosting, claiming, among other things, that its hosting of GitHub breaches several patents.
Oh, joy, a patent story.
This is it's a pretty wacky sort of... You go through the article and it's the filing, and it goes through a list of patents and says that the Rackspace breaches them by use of its Rackspace cloud server product and its GitHub hosting product. So they seem to think that Rackspace own GitHub or something. It's quite confusing.
So is there a patent on cloud hosting?
No, it's some sort of funny data storage thing, apparently. I've not read the patents in detail because, you know.
Method for storing some data on a disk. Patent number 4533321.
In happy news, a new Humble Bundle offer has begun, alongside the release of Nikki and the Robots. Have I jumped past?
Yeah. Sorry, keep going.
Just keep
Nobody
going.
Nobody will notice.
Well, Mark noticed, alongside the release of Nikki and the Robots, an independent platform game available under a similar pay-what-you-like scheme.
Excellent. And this is through the Ubuntu Software Center.
Again, yes.
Excellent.
So you can, and they've just added some more games to it.
Ooh.
Which is good.
Can you pay what you want through the Software Center?
No, you go to Humble Bundle.
No, you pay Canonical £100 and they pay the
And we will pass on all of your money. No, you go to Humble Bundle and then you get a link.
Right, okay.
Cool.
It's been revealed that a Wikimedia trustee and a Wikipedian in residence, two highly trusted positions in the Wikipedia community, have edited Wikipedia pages on behalf of PR clients.
Oh.
Wikipedia founder Jimmy Wales described the act as wildly inappropriate.
I found it as, like, not even remotely surprising, or is that just my... I was like,
it is
sure.
A wiki.
Yeah.
Mm. You're not allowed to do...
The community guidelines. Edits. That
yeah, sure, but you know,
conflicts of interest. I think it falls under.
Wasn't really surprised
when you've got Gibraltar as the featured article for something like four days hilarious. Out of seven in the week. Yeah,
it was.
Yeah,
awesome. Right. Gibraltar marketing board or something was the PR client, was it? Right, okay. And finally in the news, developers of the Vivaldi tablet running the Plasma Active interface have been forced to look at new hardware options of the tablet's release after being let down by manufacturers.
Hmm. Yeah, so apparently they sort of got everything agreed and then they went back to look at the sort of final hardware and it was somewhat substandard from what they thought they'd agreed, so they're going elsewhere.
Oh.
But hopefully we'll see something eventually.
Cool. And that's the end of the news.
And we've got some events. We have SkyCon coming up on the 6th and 7th of October.
Not long now.
No.
I'm going.
You're speaking.
Yeah, I am. You can hear me. Oh, I see. At the conference.
Oh, hey, you flying there?
No, I'm going in a plane.
Goodness sake!
Comedy gold.
And if that's not enough for you, Hack Manchester is at the 27th and 28th of October. It's a 24-hour coding competition. Teams of four people are going to be coding at the Museum of Science and Industry as part of the Manchester Science Festival. So yeah, go along to that.
Cool.
And that's all the events we've got time for this time.
Hello, and welcome to Tomorrow's Technology Today. I'm Douglas Austin Cambridge. Good day to all our listeners, wherever you are around the British Empire, or indeed the Isle of Sheppey. And it's a good day to our charming hostess, Miss Deirdre Morris-Oxford.
Good day, Douglas.
And what item of tomorrow's technology have you for us, today?
In the very near future, people will be taking all forms of exercise in private gymnasia with some marvellous new items of equipment. For example, the exercise bicycle without wheels.
Without wheels? How do you get anywhere?
You don't go anywhere, Douglas. It's for taking anaerobic exercise through the motion of pedalling.
What's wrong with getting on a real bicycle and going somewhere? That's what I did in my youth, touring France.
You rode the Tour de France?
The what?
The Tour de France.
Oh, Tour de France. Well, I rode a Tour of France, not the Tour. Ah, great days. A good bottle of Beaujolais in every village. Views from the Pyrenees. A near miss with a French farmer's donkey cart. Going off the road and falling down the side of an Alp. Nursed back to health by a French milkmaid.
Falling down a mountain on a bicycle. Weren't you injured?
Only slightly. Beaujolais is a marvellous muscle relaxant. It's all very character building.
Well, soon you'll be able to take exercise without those physical hazards. With the scenery projected on a screen inside the gymnasium, you can take it all in without having to travel.
Locked in an airless room, enforced exercise, dressed in your vest and pants, it sounds like my old school.
This is much more scientific, Douglas, with devices to monitor your heart rate, lung capacity, miles travelled.
You could just as well play a game of cricket, or lawn tennis, or croquet.
Croquet is not an anaerobic exercise.
It is the way my Aunt Regina plays it. My word, it's terrifying. She learned to play in Afghanistan. Do you know that the Afghan tribesmen play with their...
That's all from Tomorrow's Technology Today. Toodle-pip and God Save the King.
episodes ago, we brought you a fantastic competition to win a copy of Ubuntu Made Easy, a book that we reviewed in that self-same episode. It is now time to go over the entries. I haven't got them. So, yes, we're going to talk about some of the suggestions that we received as part of our competition. The competition the question of the competition was to tell us, in 140 characters or less, or fewer, I can't remember which is the right way, to tell us what you would do, what one thing you would do to make the Ubuntu desktop better.
I think we said Ubuntu better.
Make Ubuntu better, not just a desktop. Okay, yeah. Sorry, Laura. Okay, so we had some entries, and we're going to talk about some of them and see what we think, and then pick a winner. So listen.
First one, Aaron Pearson.
Yeah.
He says, Ubuntu should include a recommended YouTube channels list with a shortcut on the desktop.
Interesting.
So this could be sort of, you could have a channel for Ubuntu tutorials, perhaps. Alan Pope screencasts.
From 5 years ago, yes.
The half an hour tutorial of Unity.
How to install Ubuntu.
Yeah. It's not a bad idea, actually. And
the problem with that, tying it to a specific vendor like YouTube, is YouTube actually doesn't work in some countries.
Really?
It's blocked in some places, yes. Places like China.
Oh, right.
Which is, that place where we have loads and loads of shops that are branded Ubuntu and sell computers running Ubuntu.
Well, they must have an equivalent. It could be a...
Careful.
Well, could Canonical host the videos themselves?
I don't think we want to get into that. But that's why we have a video lens. We have, like, loads of providers,
right?
And you go to the video lens and you type what you want. Tuition, tutorial, you know. And that way... We don't have to point to one provider, and it does GeoIP lookup, so it's tailored for where you are.
I guess there's two parts. One is actually having official tutorial videos produced, because I think most of the ones are community efforts at the moment.
Well, it's funny. There is a YouTube channel called Celebrate Ubuntu.
Right. Really?
Yeah, and that's run by Canonical.
Oh. Who knew?
Yeah. And it's run by the communications department.
Right, okay.
So when you see, like, some of those funky marketing videos, they'll be in that channel.
Right.
And we don't have a lot of those. Mm. But we don't have a huge, budget for creating tutorial videos. But, thankfully, there's a huge community of people out there who do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's an interesting idea. So thank you for that one, Aaron. Yeah. Robert Maniki. Not sure I pronounced that correctly, but I'm going to carry on anyway. Suggested that basically remove Unity, install GNOME Classic as the one thing.
So it's all, I didn't expect that one.
Always one.
To be honest, I was expecting... We only got one. I was expecting a lot more people
did
suggesting
that. Did we not say?
Oh, yes, we did, didn't we?
I think we said on the first one...
Yes, you're not allowed to win.
Don't give us that one, because we know that.
Yeah.
We know
maybe
that
it's been funny.
Yeah.
You see, the problem... What can you do? I mean...
GNOME Classic doesn't exist.
GNOME Classic is dead as a project. So blame Upstream for that one. what are we supposed to do? Like, revive it like the Mint guys have, which is it Cinnamon or Mate? I don't know. One of them is a fork of what was GNOME 2 and is old and crufty and doesn't seem to get an awful lot of love. And the other one is a fork of GNOME 3. So... What's best is, like, all these different developers go off all around the world forking old stuff that everyone's moved on from and is now dead, or we create a new thing that actually is better than those things that were...
Well, yeah, there's a bit of a chicken and egg thing there, because people wouldn't have to move off it if it was supported and maintained properly.
Yeah, but why do people support stuff? Because there's an itch to scratch... Because they want to fix stuff, or because someone's paying them to do it.
Yeah.
And nobody is paying developers to work on GNOME 2, and nobody seems to be wanting to maintain it, which is why it's dead.
But it doesn't... that's the situation at the moment. Someone could revive it.
Yeah. Someone could revive CDE if they really wanted to. You know,
they did, actually. They released it as open source.
Woohoo!
Yes, for the real
the
Unity
saviour
haters.
Of the Linux desktop is CDE.
Yeah. Yes, okay, right. I don't think
so we've been that one. Well, next!
I don't think I'm ever going to win an argument about Unity with Alan. Right, Laura, who's next?
I don't know. I can't see.
John Vivole.
Oh, yeah.
Johan, I suspect.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. I completely missed a letter out there. Yeah, Johan Vivole. You have to install Ubuntu yourself on hardware you already use. Difficult. I would make it easy to deliver it pre-installed.
Interesting. So I think what he's saying is that half the battle is installing it yourself as a barrier to adoption.
Yeah. So to make it easy is to have it pre-installed.
Yeah.
Which I agree with.
I think everyone does, really. I think it's one of those things that the easiest thing to do would be to walk into a shop and, you know, there's the aisle of, you know, Windows laptops, there's the aisle of Apple laptops, and then there's the aisle of Ubuntu laptops.
Mm.
You know,
it could happen.
That's what it should be. Or, you know, or a huge variety of things. Or maybe there should be a series of laptops. Yeah. And then, you know, you choose. It costs this much with Windows, it costs this much with OS X, it costs this much with Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for sake of argument, this much with Red Hat Fedora.
No.
Well,
we're making Ubuntu easier. Yeah. We're not making the others easier.
That's true, yeah.
The others can stay difficult as far as we're concerned.
Well, there
it's a bit
is
of partisanship.
But I think that would be the right way to go, is to have, you know, choice. And in fact, I've said this before, almost every single machine in their line is certified to run Ubuntu. They all run Ubuntu fine. Mm. All the machines that they sell right now run Ubuntu just fine. But the problem is that in the various regions around the world, the heads of those regions just currently choose not to put those out on show on the website.
Is there anything from a technical point of view that could be done to make it easier to deliver Ubuntu pre-installed? Or do you think it's just a marketing or mind share? Or
it's partly a technical issue in that the hardware has to be supported.
Yeah.
But that's why we have people working in the Far East, is to work with the device manufacturers and make sure that the stuff does work.
Right.
So that right at the source, where the actual, you know, chips are put on the boards, we know it works all the way over there. So by the time it gets to be in a cardboard box on your desk and you take it out, you know everything's going to work. So that is being worked on. I don't think necessarily there are technical issues. They're you know, issues to try and get the desktop to work in a way that users want, and work in a way that the people who are selling it, the salespeople at, you know, Dell and all these other Lenovo, HP, Acer and Asus and all the others, those people want to sell it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And I'm not sure that's a technical problem.
No. Right, Laura, who's next?
Chris Giltnane says, for non-techie users, a GUI for creating and maintaining FS tab and auto FS files for connecting to home network NASes.
I was actually thinking about something like this being handy the other day, because my girlfriend just bought a new laptop and I was just trying to set her up some sort of network share so that she can have her stuff on a server and just put it down to her laptop when she needs it.
Yeah.
And it all involves hacking around, setting up Samba shares and hoping that you've got the permissions right and everything like that. There's no way of just saying, oh, there's a file system over there, I'd like that here, without going around into files and knowing what you're looking for.
Are you talking at the client end or the server end?
Both.
You can set up what they call a bookmark, which is a server, but it doesn't automatically mount it when you log in. You have to click it, which is okay if you are just using the UI.
Mm.
But if you have an application that might want to open a file
like
on that location, you have to make sure it's mounted properly before you can use the application to access it. So there is a little bit of it. It could be a better experience, I think. It's fine for media that you plug directly into your machine, because that all auto-mounts and is lovely. But, you either end up editing file system tables or you know, trying to put some other kludge in place.
Checkbox on those bookmarks that says auto-mount.
The thing is, a lot of the time it's not even mounted. It's Nautilus doing a bit of clever wizardry over the top.
Why does it need to be mounted? I mean, when I say mounted, you're saying mounted at a specific point in the file system /MNT or /media or something. Why does it have to be there? Why can't it be that in Nautilus there's an icon and you click on it and that's my media folder that's somewhere on the network?
It depends on the application. A lot of applications will play nicely with a document, say, that's stored on a share that's viewed through Nautilus.
Right.
Some things just don't like those shares. Mm. They don't know how to address them. So it's more perhaps about the application level support.
Okay, so those are bugs that need fixing.
Potentially, yes.
Because, you know, if I so what I tend to do, if I want to watch a film that I've ripped from a DVD or something
that you want,
that's on my server, I would open Nautilus and I would just click Browse Network, mm-hmm. and then I click Home Server, Media, Film, and then I click the film. More recently, I've just started running XBMC and using a remote control. But if I'm on my desktop, I'll just like navigate through the folders.
So hold on, how's it shared on your home server?
Samba.
And how did you set that up?
Through the GUI.
No, I edited etc, SMB, blah, blah, blah.
There we go.
So there is no GUI. Yeah, so this is why I asked client or server side. Client side, easy. Server side, Webmin.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. But it's a good suggestion, yeah? So I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
definitely bears worth thinking about. Albert is Lava has suggested an overlay with arrows and descriptions of all the icons and buttons with the links for more information and help. And he sent us a screenshot that he's mocked up to illustrate his point, which he does admit probably takes him over 140 characters.
So this is sort of like the shortcuts overlay that you get the moment when you hold down the home key.
Yes.
But it points at the bits of the interface and tells you what they are. Oh, I'm looking at the screenshot. It's quite a...
It's comprehensive.
It's comprehensive. It's a nice idea.
Yeah. It like would be good trash, if... where files go before they're permanently deleted.
It would be good if the thing popped up as you hovered over it, rather than all of them being on there all the time. And I'm not sure that's what he's suggesting.
No, but... I don't think he is.
Okay, good suggestion.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I genuinely like that because... It just gives you a one place what everything is.
Yeah.
Computers like geeks like baked goods, coffee and or beer. Please trade one or more of those to help with your computer. Excellent. Oh, these are tips.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Right.
One of the tips is, I don't know, man.
At least he's honest.
I like that tip.
I like that.
Chris said, I think Ubuntu would be easier to use without the need to use command line.
Wow.
I think it would be easier to use if you learnt the command line.
Ooh.
We should find a bug and say remove the terminal. And have like a spin of Ubuntu that has no terminal and switches off all the TTYs.
Interesting.
Mm.
Or maybe just have a package you install, which is, you know, it's called, I don't know, dumb and dumber.deb or something.
Even Mac OS has the terminal. By default installed.
I've no problem with the terminal being there. I just don't want to have to use it.
Yeah. Okay. And some people have said, I think we've said numerous times, you know, if you have to use the terminal, it's a bug, you know.
Yeah.
And
if you have to use the terminal, it's a bug.
Yeah.
Okay. I think
if you want to use it as a shortcut because it's more efficient for you, that's fine.
Yeah. And copying and pasting, you know, an instruction on how to do something, it is easy. We've covered this a lot in the past. But I would love to see it. If there was a possibility to have a system that, you know, where we almost never use the command line, you know, if over time you could plot the number of times you've executed GNOME terminal or that you've switched to a TTY0 and see that the number of times goes down and down and down over, that would be good, aiming for zero.
The only time I use it at work is for our desktop, I think. And
why?
Then there I just got up, for that. Up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't work. It didn't have the options I needed.
Yeah,
oh,
you do that. Yeah,
yeah, that's hassle. Okay. I do that at work.
Yeah, to file a bug, you use
you go to the help menu and choose report a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
12 months ago, that would have been open up a terminal and type report bug.
I had a bug the other day, but I can't remember what it is. But it was really annoying me.
Okay.
And I know Alan would tell me
thanks
to.
Thanks for sharing.
Cool story, bro.
Yeah.
Videsh has sent his suggestion. I would encourage Ubuntu to create standard-looking application front ends. In this way, from release to release, the GUI for all applications would look consistent and would have an integrated look with Unity, while the back end can be easily changed out. I realize this is the way Mac does it, but it's one of its strengths.
So more sort of having...
consistency.
Yeah,
style
like,
guide.
Like interface, yes, an interface sort of style guide for... Yeah, Unity apps, I suppose.
That's true. There isn't one, is there?
There's guidelines for GNOME applications, which obviously a lot are in.
Yes.
But it's quite different from
Yeah. I don't think we do have one.
They're certainly not consistent at the moment.
We don't have a Unity HIG. We might have one.
And I mean, you couldn't, if you're writing a standard GNOME map that's to go in all the different distributions, how could you?
Well, you'd have to assume that they're using GNOME the way GNOME intended.
Yeah.
As soon as you, you know, rip out huge chunks of it and replace it with, you know, something else, then, you know, you've kind of broken that a little bit.
Yeah.
But, there are guidelines. You can still use them as guidelines. Not necessarily, you know, a rule book to throw at people.
Yeah. Right. Okay. The time has come to make a decision about who we should want to be our winner. Once we've excluded people who emailed the wrong email address, people who have typed more than 140 characters.
And people who were wrong.
And people who... people who Mark disagrees with.
Right. I love these because we always get like super interesting and really wacky thoughts from, you know, people. And these are, you know, people's genuine use cases. And I think the one that stands out for me, even though I kind of disagree with it, is the one from Chris about the GUI for maintaining stuff like that.
Yeah.
I like that
one. I think that would be my choice for a winner as well.
I can count the characters if you want.
Okay.
To make sure it's 140.
Oh, while you're doing that.
Phew. With spaces, it's 117.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Cool. Okay, well, congratulations, Chris. You're our winner for this competition. If you email us in your address, Alan will post the book out to you.
Eventually.
At the first available opportunity.
Yes, I will.
There's a promise.
And now it's time for a bit of Ubuntu.
Okay.
It is. So the community winners of the Ubuntu App Showdown have been announced.
Who won?
I don't know.
There were three winners, and I couldn't tell you. Follow the link in the show notes.
One of them was a religious calendar, which tells you the dates of various feasts, I think.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
So these were voted for by members of the community.
That was second place, or with Cal.
Big fan of feast.
Third place was...
I mean, I like other ice cream as well, but...
Third place was Cuttlefish.
Oh, that's the a sort of if this, then that, but for the desktop. That's quite cool. It's... I like that.
What?
What?
Sorry, yes. ifthisthenthat.com is a
website.
Sort of... Yeah, it's a website for sort of linking APIs together, so you can say, oh, if someone tweets and it's got this in, then fire off this job on another service. So this is sort of like that for your desktop, so you can link into different...
I know what he's talking about.
We're just not with it anymore, Alan.
Just because I look clueless doesn't mean I am.
It's been about for about 12 months.
Wow.
So yeah, Cuttlefish is quite cool. And who won?
Ridual. As the application with highest score, Ridual gets the top position as the piece of software most loved by the voters. Ridual gives you back a classic in modern form, a dual-pane file manager.
Oh, God, yeah. Isn't that
Wing Commander or something?
Wing Commander.
Midnight Commander.
Midnight Commander.
Yeah. That was the one I was just kind of, wow.
I didn't really like Midnight Commander.
What about the Wing Commander?
It's all right. It makes me laugh.
Oh, okay.
Right, Quetzal Beta 2 is landing, including the shopping lens, as we've discussed.
Indeed.
Yes.
Amazon and Ubuntu One Music Store links in the launcher by default, as we've discussed.
No, we haven't actually.
Oh, is that, did we not? Oh, in the launcher. Yeah. Oh, so there's going to be icons for them.
Yeah, down here. So there'll be an icon for Ubuntu One Music Store underneath. Yeah,
Alan gestures towards the left-hand side of
Libre
the screen.
Office. Here, here, and here. Down the left-hand
side.
And
I assume that the Amazon link will automatically tag your session with Canonicals.
Certainly does.
Okay.
It's all about
which costs you nothing.
Yeah.
And takes you straight to Amazon, and you can
Except
buy
your
stuff.
Freedom and liberty.
Is it going to? Oh,
Amazon, if you're going to Amazon already,
does Amazon link in with the new Unity Web Apps API?
I don't know actually.
Because if it does, then that's cool.
I bought some batteries.
Today. I bought some batteries yesterday.
Today, using this Amazon lens thing. Oh. Yeah, so I'm helping pay my own salary.
Oh no, that's a good reason to avoid.
He's going to pay for petrol to get down here somehow.
Yeah, that's true. You have to buy lots of batteries.
So he's contributing it back to the community.
Yeah, or something.
Yeah, okay.
Carry on, Mark.
There's finesse of the dash.
Yes, if you look at the technical overview notes. for Beta 2, you'll see there is a boatload of little fixes. They had a design sprint a week or so before Beta 2, but after feature freeze,
and
after user interface freeze, unfortunately.
It's the best time to do it, in my experience.
And fix loads of stuff. The good thing that came out of it, fix loads of stuff.
Excellent. Cool.
So, yeah, loads of little, you know, niggly things where things weren't placed right, or, you know, the size of stuff wasn't quite right, or didn't match the design, so they've, you know, had a blast and fixed a load of them.
Cool.
In other news, the OpenStack Foundation has been officially launched with Canonical as a Platinum member. Didn't we mention this last week?
No, we mentioned that VMware...
Yeah, other people were going for it.
But now it's more important because we are. Right.
Yes. Yeah. But it's still not made it to the news.
Just because it's a Canonical thing, so it's about
Ubuntu. About Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Okay. And Mike Hall is looking for help to build a new documentation portal for Ubuntu app developers.
Mm. Interesting. Yes. So this is where I was thinking of this whole Unity Human Interface Guidelines kind of stuff. Kind of documentation could fit in there. And also, this is more documentation about, you know, APIs and how you get started with developing apps on Unity and how you use the indicators and how you use the thing on the side. And Michael's actually developed a little app that I think it's called I Love Unity, I think. Hello Unity. It's called Hello Unity. And it's a little app that lets you trigger various things on the screen, like trigger an indicator or trigger a launcher icon, and then see the code behind that makes that happen. So you can make something happen and then go, oh, that's how you do it. Right, copy and paste that code out. It's just like a load of code samples. It's really good.
Sure.
Laura.
I know. I'm leaving a nice little pause, and then...
Dead air is a crime.
So, details of Ubuntu's Secure Boot implementation have been updated, and the implementation will now use Grub2.
Woohoo! So this was after the initial announcement saying there were concerns over Grub2's GPL3 licensing, meaning that they might have to release their private key, which would sort of make it pointless.
There was a worry about that, yes.
Yeah, but then the Free Software Foundation said, actually, no, that's all right.
What's Secure Boot about?
This is so that...
It's a Microsoft requirement, but it's implemented in UEFI.
Yes.
Which is the replacement for the BIOS.
And there was a lot of worry that Linux wouldn't be able to be installed on machines that had Secure Boot by default. And so each Linux vendor has come up with a solution. And we got a kicking when we first said we weren't going to use Grub2, we were going to use something else. I think some Intel bootloader or something
differently. Yeah, it wasn't entirely open source or something at the time. Yeah,
it was licensed differently, and we got a kicking because we didn't use Grub2, and now we're getting a kicking because we've changed our minds, and now we are using Grub2. So, yeah.
Grun.
Do you think the community are their own worst enemy sometimes?
It's not the community that are giving us the kicking, it's everyone else.
Okay.
Blame the community.
Oh, well, as long as we can keep booting Ubuntu, that's all we really care about.
People are always booting Ubuntu.
Ba-dum-tsh.
And that's the end of the bit about Ubuntu. We've got no bit about anything else.
People can complain about that.
And now,
go on.
You could have just carried on. No one would have known.
And now.
Go on.
Don't let us stop you.
Feedback.
Roger Light emailed us to let us know that we, except for me, were all wrong about the point in the desktop is dead section last episode.
The point that Linus and Alan Cox made about the kernel being happy to break compatibility is purely down to the internal interfaces. The external interfaces don't change. The problem is that the internal interfaces include drivers. For drivers that don't live in the kernel tree, especially closed source drivers, this is where the pain lies, as they don't automatically get refactored. The GNOME team, on the other hand, were changing their external interface.
It's completely clear now.
Yeah. And sorry, Roger, that had to be hugely edited down, so I hope it still makes the sense that it made when you started.
Did you completely change the meaning of what he said?
I did get Mark to review it.
Right.
As long as it's clear that I was right, then that's...
Oh, well, that's okay then.
So this is perhaps equivalent to somebody changing the way that the GNOME libraries work that means that all the other applications would have to be changed.
Yes.
It's not the same as somebody doing some internal gubbins within the kernel.
No.
It's more like changing some fundamental system call that means all of the command line applications would have to be changed.
Exactly.
Right. Don't change anything, that's what I say.
Just don't move. Stu Siddons, a self-proclaimed Ubuntu noob who runs Ubuntu in VMware on his iMac, also emailed us.
I run it alongside OS X simply because it has such an incredible array of useful and free software. I can find an Ubuntu application to help me chop up an MP3, convert something to something else, back up protected DVDs, all in a matter of minutes, for free. Best of all, the comments people put on the forums and reviews are worth their weight in gold compared to those on the more common platforms. I can't honestly see myself ever taking the full plunge and becoming a person who only has Ubuntu, because I don't feel I'll ever have that critical mixture of confidence in Linux to easily and reliably deliver my requirements, and confidence in my own skills to work around the little issues that pop up from time to time. I think that comes with
time.
Beard growth.
Yes. neck beard growth. Yes. Sorry, Laura, go on.
Also, the examples that he gives of things that he uses Ubuntu for are things that don't come as standard, as far as I know.
No, yeah, but what he's like, saying is that for any utility that he needs, he knows he can just go into Ubuntu Software Center and search for Chop MP3 or something and find it and see the reviews. And
yeah, but he said he's worried about being able to sort of self-support, but he's already doing more complicated things in Ubuntu than most people would do in Ubuntu. Therefore,
he's already an expert user.
Yeah.
And he's obviously found the forums and things like that and been able to use them for support. Mm. So I think, Steve, go on. You know you want to
do it. Do it. It's an iMac as well. I've got Ubuntu on my iMac. It works fine.
Yeah. Do it. And then email in to tell us how well it went.
Go for it, Stu.
Cool. And that's the end of your feedback.
And that's all for this episode. Thank you for listening. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, including voicemail numbers, Twitter feeds, Facebook and IRC channels. Let us know what you think of the show or give us your thoughts around Ubuntu and the community around it. And join us on Tuesday the 9th of October for our next live broadcast.
You did very well, Laura. You managed to not corpse during the outro.
Thank you.
My mum commented that we'd been very immature when we'd laughed in the last couple of episodes.
Oh dear. Sorry, Mum.
Dear. There we go. So thank you for listening, everybody.
And, when's the next episode?
It's on Tuesday the 9th of October.
As I said.
Yeah, I wasn't listening.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. 2 weeks, as ever.
Yes.
See you then, everybody.
Bye.
Yes, thanks
Bye.
For listening. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.
Amy Ferguson.